Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
My name is Mary. I'm a compulsive overeater, a recovering bulimic, and a codependent. I have done this work as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with the help of two loving patient sponsors and an amazing God. I've made all the amends that God has orchestrated for me so far, and I trust Him to work out the rest when the time is right. In the meantime, I work steps 10, 11, and 12 imperfectly each day. When Isabel asked me to speak today, I was floored. You see, I'm fortunate enough to call her my sponsor, but foolish enough not to call her very often. So I had to really work through some feelings of unworthiness. But God had me say yes pretty quickly. As most of you already know, you don't say no to Isabel. Her close relationship with God is so profoundly apparent that it would feel like you'd be saying no directly to Him. I was born in Passaic, New Jersey in 1969. My mother, Ellen, was a secretary, and my father, Michael, worked for Bell Telephone in New York. So my siblings tell me that he liked to brag that he had helped install the ball that they dropped on Times Square every New Year's Eve. I have three older siblings, Tracy, Tom, and Mike, who were all born a year apart. My birth, 4 years later, was revealed to be an unsuccessful attempt to save a failing marriage. Over the years, I have come across many photos of my older siblings playing with my father in the snow, fishing, or just sitting next to them as they blew out their birthday candles. There are no such pictures of me, as by the time I came along, Dad had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. My childhood memories of him involved tiptoeing past the family room, where he would sit alone for hours watching war movies or Benny Hill on the black and white TV. I also remember him yelling at my mother if dinner did not involve any meat. And he would often leave the table and make himself a sandwich while we all cleaned up. I have no recollections of conversations with my father until after my parents divorced, but I do remember going to visit him at the mental health facility that he would be sent to after a manic episode. On one such occasion, he handed me a wallet, which he had made with leather and plastic cord. My initial had been branded upside down. I thanked him, but he said nothing. I have a very vivid memory of being at a party with my parents. I was probably five or so. There were a lot of adults, a lot of alcohol, and a few kids. I went upstairs to use the bathroom and saw my father kissing a strange woman in the hallway. I told my mother, and the next thing I knew, we were all in the car and Mom was screaming. In another memory, I'm around 10. My father is dragging my brother Tommy across the floor by his hair, because the cops had brought him home drunk. It was Christmas time. Mom brought all four of us kids to stay in Aunt Lorraine's one-bedroom apartment for 6 weeks or so. I remember the long commute to and from school for that period. When we finally went back to the house, it was February, and the Christmas tree was still up, and there were unopened presents under the tree. That was cool. But Dad had moved out. I remember feeling very relieved. Unfortunately for me, my mom had anxiously awaited this time when my dad would no longer be there to ruin her life. She began dating almost immediately, spending weekends at the Touch of Country Bar, and even took up line dancing. My siblings were older, so they too were busy on weekends. I was sent to stay with my dad, who was essentially a stranger to me. He was quite ill by this time, and had taken to cutting articles out of magazines and newspapers about angry, selfish women and taping them to the walls of his apartment. I slept on his twin bed in that one-room apartment. He was across the room from me on the sofa. Our time together was awkward at best and frightening at times, as he was quite angry and would grill me as to my mother's social life. He would also complain to me about my ungrateful brat siblings, who were not in attendance. These visits went on for about a year until I finally begged my mom to let me stay home. She agreed to let me skip the visits, but did not feel comfortable leaving me home alone, so she started bringing me to the bar with her. I would sit in the corner, reading and drinking endless glasses of soda and eating chili and chips while she drank and danced with men. Then we'd go home and I'd tuck her in. This went on until she met Carl, who would later become her second husband, the year that my father died of cancer. I was 15. My mother loved her children, Willie Nelson, and either vodka and tonics or Harvey's Bristol Cream, depending on the time of year. Once she realized that marrying Carl did not result in a perfect life for her, she began to come home almost every night from work, sit in the rust-colored rocker recliner, and drink while listening to country music. This room was at the front of the house, so this situation was a hard one to avoid. I had an after-school job by this point, so I would come home to this every evening. Often she'd be crying about what her life may have been and wanted me to please just sit with her. Sometimes I did. To this day, I often get an adverse physical reaction to country music, which is pretty darn hard to avoid down here in Florida. My siblings had their own ways of dealing with the stressors of home. My sister, the eldest, became the consummate overachiever. Track star, color guard, straight A student, and wildly promiscuous. She was diagnosed with bipolar 1 many years ago. My brother Tommy began his drinking in earnest in his early teens. He got into a terrible car accident when he was 19, crashing his prized Chevelle SS into a tree. I'll never forget that day because my mother received the phone call from the hospital as we were all getting ready for Aunt Lorraine's wedding. Because I was the youngest at 14, it was decided that I, at least, should attend. While the rest of my family sat vigil at Tommy's bedside, I was at a wedding reception, charged with babysitting the younger kids so their parents could enjoy themselves. Tommy was in a coma for 4 days, then required speech and physical therapy for several months to heal. Tommy married young, had 2 great kids, and a beautiful house in the mountains. But although he did rehab a few times, has never embraced recovery. His kids have not spoken to him in at least 10 years. He has late-stage liver disease and hepatitis. He was hit by a truck back in February, walking out of a bar near his apartment. He's been laid up for 6 months. Michael, 4 years my senior, was always the bookish one. He did everything to fly under the radar, which, given Tommy's antics, was often easy. But Dad was really rough on him. Maybe it was just that he didn't seem to be as deeply affected by the craziness in the house as the rest of us. But Dad went out of his way to pick on him. He became an isolator, spending most afternoons and evenings in his room reading. Michael has always struggled with his weight and was diagnosed with diabetes in his late 30s. He married a wonderful woman 24 years ago named Evelyn, who I adore. She is patient, kind, funny, and perfect for him. Sadly, during the first year of their marriage, she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, so they have never been able to have children. But they travel and dote on their nieces and nephews and seem relatively happy. And then there's me. I think my habit of seeking comfort with food began pretty young. I had a paper route at age 11, and I remember going straight to the candy store with what little money I had earned. It was about 6 blocks away, and the candy would all be gone by the time I got home. Mom was also a big fan of using food as a reward. If I did well on my report cards, I would get McDonald's and ice cream. She was also not much of a cook. There was rarely fresh fruit or veggies in my house, but there was always squeezed cheese, Malamars, and Doritos. I guess Mom wasn't crazy about having a chubby daughter because she took me to Weight Watchers at 13. It didn't stick. But I do know that my weight became a family stressor, as money was super tight after the divorce, and Mom would lament that it would be really helpful if I could fit into my sister's hand-me-downs. I never could. I tried, believe me. There's a note in my 7th grade yearbook from Mr. Moreland, my language arts teacher, encouraging me to, quote, take care of myself because he might not be there next time. That's a reference to the fact that he had caught me when I almost passed out one day from skipping meals. I wanted so badly to be an anorexic, but damn it, I love to eat. When I was in the 10th grade, Dad died and Mom married Carl 4 months later. I remember standing in the reception line. Do they call it that at a wake? I'm not sure. But Maggie Gricklack, the manager at the pizzeria where all my siblings worked and I often spent time, said, "Mary, have you gained weight?" "Yes, at my father's." "Thank you. At my father's wake," she said that. Damn it, the jig was up. I tried more diets. SlimFast, Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, again. The cabbage soup diet, the Breyers ice cream diet. Yes, it's a thing. Google it. And then I went to college. The first time I purged, it was after a night of partying. Magic. I felt so much better. And so it began. When I came into 12 Steps in the spring of 2013, I was broken. I was 44, married for 20 years to a man at that point I was pretty sure I no longer loved, had 3 children, ages 6, 16, and 19, whom I adored but had absolutely nothing to give to, and had just left a part-time job I really enjoyed at a local library. And the reason I left it was because I felt like it was time to get my act together. I need to get back into teaching full time because I was preparing for a divorce. My mother was in New Jersey at this time, dying of cancer. And my relation with my 3 older siblings was stressful and unsatisfying. I was spending a lot of time on the phone with my mother, trying to convince her to go to Al-Anon and to throw my brother out. He had lost his license in a DUI, was living with her in a 1-bedroom apartment, and was using her as his personal chauffeur. Oh, and I was binging and purging nearly every day. As I had done during countless other unbearable points in my life, I sought counseling. Unbeknownst to me, as I have always chosen therapists solely for their nice faces and their willingness to accept my insurance, I got a big book thumper. This guy had been in AA for 12 years, which I learned at our second visit when God, because it certainly wasn't my idea, had me tell him, "I think I might have some issues with food." He sent me to OA, where I spent the next couple of months mentally weighing each person in the room, disbelieving all their claims of abstinence, and getting super uncomfortable at all the talk about God. Oh, and throwing up as soon as I got home. And then God found me a sponsor who just happened to also be in BBSS. Quite honestly, I had very little faith that any of this was going to work for me, but she was just so darn cute and enthusiastic that I became willing to fake it. She just seemed so completely sure that I was going to be just fine. At first, she just let me cry and rant and cry some more. I told her things I never thought I would tell another human being about my messed up childhood, the addicts in my life, my role as people pleaser and mediator from an early age, my history of depression, the time I was put away for a suicide attempt, my marriage issues, my parenting concerns, oh, and the whole bulimia thing. I told her I had tried absolutely everything to stop purging. She convinced me that I hadn't. You see, I believed in God, but had never seen him as someone who loved me unconditionally, who wanted good things for me, and would lead me toward them if I just surrendered my own insane need to control everything around me, which was clearly failing miserably anyway. Once I finally became tired of listening to my own sob stories, my sponsor had me start reading 83 to 88 every day. We also started reading the steps together over coffee. It was helpful to think of myself as just another addict seeking a solution that had worked for thousands before me. After I had a solid 30 days of abstinence strung together, I started writing. I had well over 200 names on my resentment list, which surprised the heck out of me because I'd never seen myself as an angry person. Then came the turnarounds. Boy, did I balk. But even I could not deny the patterns I was seeing. 90% of my resentments were due to somebody's failure to speak, act, or think in the way that my fragile self-esteem required them to. It was all about making sure I was seen as precious and indispensable to everyone in my life. And boy, was that exhausting. I soon realized that if for over 20 years, my bulimia had provided the fuel I needed to keep my codependent behaviors going. I had to put down my writing several times. During one especially painful 3-month period, my mother, my best friend, and my father-in-law all passed away. My husband and I separated for 3 months as well. I slipped, but never relapsed completely, as by that time I had filled that hole in my soul with the God of my understanding, one whose voice drowned out the vicious self-talk I had heard in my head for decades and replaced it with encouragement, love, and grace for myself and those around me. It's hard for me to adequately describe the profound effect this process has had on my life. When I got here 5 years ago, I was barely functioning. I was filled with self-loathing. I was a detached mother, a distant wife, and an unreliable friend. I was going back into a field that I hated and headed for a divorce. Since crossing over in early 2016, I got laid off from my teaching job, studied for, took, and passed the GRE, and have completed my first year of graduate school. Just this past week, I moved into my own office at my university's counseling center, where I'll be interning for the next year. I'm fulfilling my lifelong dream of becoming a therapist. Not only that, but the center has an eating disorder team, which I am now a part of. I do not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. God is using my experiences to help others, and I am so grateful. Less than 1 year from now, I will graduate with my master's degree in mental health counseling and turn 50 in the same week. My marriage is a source of joy and comfort to me, and we will be celebrating our 25th anniversary next week. I have beautiful, healthy relationships with all three of my children, and God has gifted me with wonderful friendships in and out of recovery. My life is better than I ever could have imagined. Thank you for letting me share.